Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're here at the Sirius XM Studios at the Wynn in the lobby in Las Vegas. And I'm blessed to be here with some extraordinary hosts. And we are finishing up with one of my favorite mentors, a man who I've studied, listened to, been taught by, and even lives close to us. And so I look forward to spending time in person with him as well. But before we introduce Jay Abraham, we're going to introduce three of our legendary hosts. The platinum award-winning producer, over 80 million records sold, but now an extraordinary entrepreneur, the founder of the Global Gaming League, changing the culture of gaming. Clinton Sparks, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, David Meltzer.
You're welcome. And of course, the man from A&E, the intervention specialist at the show Intervention, one of the original Office Hours hosts, over 700 episodes and counting to 800, nice. Mike Diamond, the diamond in the rough. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Thanks for all the lives you're saving as well. And at the end, my anchor man, he will get along famously with Jay Abraham because they are at the same frequency. You also are neighbors as well, and I'm sure we'll be competing for the best friend status in the neighborhood. Bucky O'Neill, though, he is one of my best friends and a transformational facilitator in life and business. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, so great to be here. Thanks.
All right, now we have the honor, the CEO and founder of the Abraham Group, an incredible author, New York Times bestselling author, strategic marketing expert, and an extraordinary business consultant, but I call him just coach because he can help you through life, the mindset, the heart set, and the handset through experience and knowledge is what Jay Abraham brings to the table. Jay, thank you for your patience in the introduction, but most importantly, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. How auspicious of a group. I'm impressed. Thank you for inviting me.
We are just pleased. You know, I have always learned that the best way to learn is from someone who has already made the mistakes. And a lot of people ask for your wisdom, but very rarely have I heard anyone say, Jay, what's the biggest mistake that you've made in your life?
Is he married?
No,
I was just asking.
No. I'll tell you, the list is, if you're asking, I'll try to answer, but it's not singular.
Sure.
So the couple of really important ones in business, I was offered to get involved with Nobel Pharma when they were the first company that came out with dental implants, and I thought it was vulgar. I was offered gift cards, electronic gift cards, to get involved in a guy that became a billionaire, and I didn't really like it. So I could go on, but I have a couple of those. I also had chances to invest in gold when it was $300, and I had plenty of money, and I didn't do that. You want me to continue?
No. I was actually hoping that maybe you would give me a different type of mistake that you made, maybe a decision, not to invest, but a decision of maybe ignorance or arrogance or immaturity that you felt it was a big dummy tax.
I got a plethora of those, David, and group. So I loved diversity. I had hopeless curiosity. I had more opportunities to invest in real estate, never did it. I had more opportunities to invest at Ground Floor in some really spectacular businesses, but I tended never to be a very good investor. I tended to be more interested in immersing myself in investing and understanding a plethora of businesses and dimensions. So I should probably, and this is not an arrogant or this is not a sour grapes, I should be a billionaire. I'm not a pauper, but I'm far from it, but it's my own doing. I just chose a more interesting and fun path, but it wasn't as disciplined, but it's given me a very fascinating sort of a CAT scan perspective on business, but I could list a lot more.
We're good. I'll let Clinton take over.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to hear these things when I'm reading that you have an uncanny ability to increase business income, wealth, and success by looking at the situations from a totally different paradigm. But then you'll sit here and say, I didn't see this. I didn't understand that. It sounds like there's a lot more you didn't understand than you do. from when I'm reading this about you. And I say that respectfully.
No, it's fine. I think that I've been on the cutting edge of more businesses around the world when I was doing this really aggressively. But I think that there have been certain things that came to me that they didn't exist. I'm not a startup guy. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. My strength, and it's a very powerful, formidable strength, is taking something that's already working and making it work a lot more. Taking mechanisms, processes, systems, critical mass, velocity and motion, all kinds of things that are already working that I can get my hands around and make them work a lot better. Higher yield,
right,
risk. That I can do all day long. Startups are not in my comfort zone.
Right. Great. Makes sense.
Did you discover startups weren't in your comfort zone by doing the startups and failing and then realize you're better with something, creating momentum of something that's already been created?
Yeah, well, I'm actually quite pragmatic. If you look at the statistical probability, one in 20 or 24 startups makes it in year one and one in 10 makes it in year two. That's why there's a big difference between a PE firm and a VC firm. I like higher probability certainty. You're going to basically leverage. You don't know with the startup the viability of the concept. You don't know much about the leadership. You don't know. Usually, you've got to be a miracle worker because they're understaffed, under-resourced, under-capitalized, and you can work miracles, but if you look at probability outcome and you only have a finite amount of opportunity cost, capability, and time, why put it in something that has a 95% failure rate when you've already got a history that you can take an existing business and with a very high, I'm not going to say 100%, but with 80 or 90% certainty, you can liberate a lot more yield, a lot more performance, a lot more value. Mm. It's a sort of pragmatic decision, if that makes sense.
The thing that I want to say to you, Jay, is just, you know, thank you. Thank you for being a leader and generational guru in the space. You know, I think when it comes to paradigm, you know, you're a big part of what has created the paradigm of how people are growing businesses, at least from my understanding. I was a kid that grew up in workshops. And I remember seeing your books and seeing you on stages and seeing the tapes and all the stuff as a kid. So just want to acknowledge you for that. You know, maybe this is a question you don't get asked a lot, or maybe it is. You know, part of my curiosity as someone who's worked with all these different people and has experienced not only business, but then personally from a very intimate standpoint, you know, what are some of the things that you're learning, or what are some of the things that you've observed in the reconciliation of all these different powerful men, women, businesses, as far as like principles that you find are overlaps between all their levels of success and achievement?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's never been asked that way, so I'll see if I can answer it, but I'm going to have to plumb the depths of my brain to think about it. So probably the first thing is that I was very lucky. In my early stages, I was attracted to entrepreneurs who were either filling a void or they were enhancing dramatically an area of a business they thought where the recipient was being terribly underserved. So it was always value oriented. I was very lucky. I dealt almost always with people who were, I would call it preeminent. They were operating at a very high, high level of purpose driven, possibility driven, passion driven contribution. And they were able to see their product or service or company being deployed in somebody's life or business and the transformatic impact that was being achieved. I didn't know it at the time when I was young because I started at 18, but that made a profound difference. Also, I've been attracted and observed people who they are not wedded to tradition. They are not stuck in status quo thinking. They challenge tradition. They are not linear. They look at possibilities and they ask not why this can't work, but what it would need to do, what has to happen to make it work. And it's a very different paradigm. I look at, I just did something today that is on top of my mind. I was I started teaching something I call being an exponential entrepreneur, as opposed to operating in the incremental zone. You operate in the exponential zone because almost anything you can do in business, almost any area of a business, almost any interconnected driver, process, leverage, or impact point can be addressed either in an incremental linear way or in an exponential way, as far as how you approach it, how you stimulate yield, what you look at. And I think most people are very linear. Most people think that they have a lot, that the majority of the factors in the business are out of their control, when in fact, all but about 2 or 3%, which are acts of God, are within your control. And so I don't know if that answers your question, because it's an Beautiful. Interesting one.
Thank you.
And to finish up, Jay, you know, one of the interesting aspects that I've learned from you is the relationship with risk. And so many people, they don't determine their timing or risk tolerance before they get involved in whatever they're getting involved with. And why I found it important from studying your teachings and your guidance was that in the emotional aspect of risk, that if we understand the timing and risk tolerance and we don't succeed in whatever it is that we're doing, that we will be disappointed, but we won't have a negative energetic impact of resentment and guilt that stops us from continually taking risk. And I use a lottery ticket as an example. We know you spend $2, it's 1 in a billion chance to win $500 million. And we know we'll get a return on investment or a decision at 8 p.m. on Saturdays. And when we lose our $2, some of us are disappointed, but none of us feel guilty or resentful for spending the $2, because we knew the timing and risk tolerance. You had a concept, if I can recall, with risk reversal. And in order to understand that concept, you actually had to be cognitive of the timing and risk tolerance involved in what these interactions were. For you, has there been any evolution of awareness to risk reversal, or any types of input or insight you could give us on your relationship with risk and how you guide so many successful companies to get to the exponential outcomes?
Sure. Understandably, and hopefully my choice of startup opportunities notwithstanding, you know, when you've invested 175,000 hours in what you do, you grow a little.
That's past Gladwell, by the way, 175,000 hours.
This is it's very interesting, because everything I'm doing now, I'm trying to look at from an exponential point of view, and 175,000 to 10,000 is an exponential enhancement, just a piece of reference. So when I started understanding risk reversal was very young, and I realized that anytime two people come together for any kind of transaction, certainly business, friendship, romance, you know, love, whatever you want to call it, one side is always being asked by the other, implicitly, explicitly, knowingly, unknowingly, to take on all, more than all, or at least part of the risk. And if you can understand what that risk is, and you can mitigate it, you can reduce it, you can eviscerate it, then literally you have a much higher probability of somebody embracing, saying yes, doing whatever. That started out as a business thesis. Then you can flip it and say that any business who thinks they have to go all in, don't, because many, many, many hypotheses, many ideas, many concepts can be pre-validated in a conservative way with little risk, little expense. May not be definitive, it can be indicative, and then you can do more. So a lot of people piss away so much money unnecessarily. That was the second amount of risk that I progressed. Then I went to the concept of concentration risk, which is a really interesting concept. Many companies, I gave birth years ago, David, to what's called a lot of methodologies and concepts, the Power Parthenon. The Power Parthenon ascribes that, why would you limit all your revenue to one income source or access vehicle when you're compromised if anything goes wrong? If you deploy many of them, you're hedging your bet, you're putting the power of exponentiation to work. It's in geometry, it's really cool. But you could say many companies have concentration risk. They concentrate on a few performers, they concentrate on one media, they concentrate on a small number of sources of business, clients, they concentrate on one vendor. And so I keep evolving. I don't know if that answer is good or bad.
It's great, as all your answers have been. I cannot wait to get together with you in person and learn more and establish even a greater relationship capital with you. He's a legend. He has taught so many people. I know those who have bought the cassette tapes know what I'm talking about. They moved to CDs and DVDs as well. And now we have all type of streaming J. Abraham all around and all his disciples. Some are my mentors, teachers, and best friends. What an honor it is to have someone like J. Abraham here, author, speaker, strategic expert, business consultant, humanitarian, and
human being,
as like Clinton are. And I, unlike the perfect two over there. J. Abraham, thank you so much for joining us on Office Hours.